from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Wallrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll find out what the Indie Folk Series is presenting this fall.
I'll get a preview of the upcoming Shining Light Film Fest.
And I'll check out this year's Lotus Festival, and we'll have that arts calendar we call...
What'll we do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The Indie Folk Series continues its tradition of bringing folk, roots, Celtic, Newgrass, and many more authentic music forms to Indianapolis. Indie Folk Music Series Dan Henkel and Joanne Smitty Brush popped by to give us the sneak peek of their new season.
15th season, Indie Folk Series. I'm looking at Dan, who was there at the birthing. At the conception, actually.
You know, it's hard to believe because each season goes by in a blur, and before you know it, you've had a few artists back a couple of times, and you've got people to say, yeah, my kids have enjoyed these concerts, and now they're off to college. So we started 2001.
And someday they'll say, and they're bringing their kids, because that's one of the great things about your concerts is unlike some kinds of music, you attract a really broad demographic. You've got little tiny kids and big kids in old person's bodies.
We do. It's intergenerational, and it's a safe, family-friendly environment. It's comfortable. We do have wine available, but it's all very discreet, and people just bring their friends and families, have a great time.
Joanne, you have stepped up into a new volunteer role or an expanded volunteer role. What appeals to you about Indie Folk Series?
I love the community aspect about it. I like that we can introduce new performers to the Indie Folk Series who maybe have never played Indianapolis before. And we have, the Indie Folk Series is fortunate that we have, to a certain extent, a built-in audience. People will come and they trust us and they will take a chance on someone that they've not heard before.
Are you a performer yourself?
I am not. I play the CD. And I play that very well.
Well, that's an important role as well. Listeners who have WFYI member cards may be aware. Wait, Indie Folk Series, aren't they a member card benefit?
That is right. 2-for-1 admission with your WFYI member card. We're very pleased to partner with WFYI. And just bring your card to the door. And for those concerts where we do online ticket sales, that works online as well.
One of the cool things about your venue, why don't I have one or both of you describe UUI? What is the building like?
Well, it's the Unitarian Universalist Church of Indianapolis, just south of the Butler University campus. Doesn't feel like a church when we're there. It's an octagonal building with a lot of glass, art up on the walls, and the seats are arranged theater style, platform at the front, fabulous sound system, and there's some tables where if you come early enough, you can get a table, sit with your friends, get refreshments in the back. It turns into a listening room.
What do you mean by that?
People come here to listen. We get a number of artists and some bands who have worked professionally for years. They say, gosh, this is different. We love it because we played three jobs this week. They were in bars and people weren't there for the music and it was loud. And here we can try out things that we're still working on, or we can do some of the maybe more sensitive, softer material. They know that the audience is there and they comment on that loop where the audience engaged, giving back, sometimes singing along.
So they're very focused in their listening, very intent, very intentional.
Yes, sure. And thanks to Carl Zemlin, the audio quality is just terrific. You can hear very well, and the performers are at their best, and the audience is into it.
Actually, you are having more and more artists make recordings out of the gigs that they've played for you, right?
Yeah, we've had a couple albums that were recorded live there because the moment was so perfect and the sound quality turned out well. So Hogeye Navi is one of those.
What a fun band. Yeah.
They are. And interesting thing, as Joanne says, we get a lot of the regulars who say, hey, I go to each of the Indie Folk Series shows that I can. I know it'll be something I enjoy. And then often the band brings in people. Hog-Eye Navi or somebody else who's that popular comes in. They bring a lot of their own people who may not have been there before. And we'll get somebody from out of town who, as Joanne said, we like to bring in, introduce to this audience. And we'll get people say, hey, I'm from Michigan and I know this band and I want to hear them.
It really is a labor of love for you all. You pay your artists, but everything else is volunteer, right? You have no paid staff?
That's correct. Even our dedicated sound man, Carl Zemlin, as Dan mentioned, is volunteer. Many organizations, the sound man gets paid, but we are all volunteers. We have a small group of us who sort of plan and promote and book the season, and then we have an additional 10 to 12 to 15 people who help out on the day of the show. And they do everything from bring food and refreshments and take tickets and help us set up the chairs and do all those so important day of things. So, yeah, we do it because we like to and we enjoy it.
And you have a particularly personal reason that you started volunteering. Can you tell the story to me that you said before we turned the microphones on?
Oh, just my husband and I were sort of going through a transition in our lives, and we chose to seize the day and look to the future and get out into the community and do some good.
Good for you. Fantastic. One of the things I like about your series is Hog-Eye Navi, people, locals are probably very familiar with, but you kind of mix it up and you introduce your audiences to some locals, but also some regional and national and even international artists. I picture the core group of you getting together, what, once a month or so and saying, I heard this great band when I was up in Chicago last month. We should consider them for next season. Is that kind of how it works?
That's part of it, because we'll each have our favorites that we've learned or turned on to. And many of the leadership go to Folk Alliance Region Midwest, and we hear new artists, and we'll say, you know, who did you like? We'll bring some of those folks in, and several of them are on this year's schedule. And then people suggest bands to us. They say, hey, you know somebody I'd really like to hear. It's an embarrassment of riches because there are so many artists out there and just a limited number of concerts. So we book way ahead, and Phil Slates does the booking, bless his soul, and you got to be early and just right for the mix in the venue, and we like to keep that variety.
Right, and especially since most of your gigs are Saturday nights, you really have to get on people's
calendars
early.
It's always Saturday night.
Yeah.
And we try very hard to have a diverse season. We like to have a mix of bluegrass, Celtic, singer-songwriters. Folk is such a broad umbrella, and there are so many talented artists. It's just so difficult to narrow it down to just a selection.
Yeah. And some people may be thinking, I don't like folk music, but it is it's a big tent, I guess you would say. It encompasses so many different styles and influences, too.
Well, it does. If there's something that you've heard in the past that you just didn't care for at all and you think that's folk music, that may be a half a 1% of what we do. Because if you just look through that schedule, you can go to indiefolkseries.org and see the whole season in front of you. You'll see you've got that variety that Joanne was talking about.
You mentioned something about the pre-performance entertainment. Tell me about that.
Sure. New for this coming season, for selected concerts, in the lobby before the concert and during intermission, we'll be having some acoustic musicians performing. Generally, we're looking at local up-and-coming talent. Just a little pre-show to get people in the mood and set the tone for what to expect later on.
That's fun.
And that happens as people are getting ready for the concert, picking up some refreshments and glass of wine or cup of coffee. Speaking of refreshments, we're really blessed. We have good people like my wife, Beth, and others in the kitchen chopping up the vegetables and putting out dip and things. And then sometimes people will come in with a plate of cookies or a snack that they've made that they just want to donate to the cause. So as people are milling around before the concert at intermission, they hear some live music, they get a little nosh and get in the mood.
What a community you've built.
It really is. It's wonderful. And it's great to hear people's stories about why they're involved, why they come, who their acts are, and the friends that they've brought.
Yeah. Let's talk about your opening act, Scott Cook, with whom I was not familiar until I visited your website. Tell us a little bit about Scott.
I think that Scott is our first international performer. He's all the way from Canada. Scott is one of those performers that we met at Folk Alliance last year. He's a singer-songwriter, a traveling troubadour, wears his heart on his sleeve, really interesting songs about people and their stories, and I think our audience is really going to like him.
Is the description of him traveling Canada in a hobo-esque way, are those his words?
Yes.
I love
yes,
that.
Yes, those are his words.
I have no doubt that's true. And we see the way people travel. Some arrive in a couple of very nice vehicles, and uh-huh. they stay at nice hotels, and then other people just live out of this old truck, and it's just a great lifestyle.
Fun. I'm sure he's got stories, and I'm sure the songs tell us about those stories. And I'm looking at you, Dan, as our resident performer here. I want you to describe two things that Scott's bringing to us: clawhammer banjo, and then fingerstyle guitar. What do those terms mean?
Well, the clawhammer is a very traditional style of playing banjo that you have probably seen done and not known the term, and it refers to the way the fingers strike the string, the pattern and the form of the fingers and the string. Very traditional banjo style. Fingerstyle guitar means you're not strumming it with a pick. You're using your thumb and the bass strings and two or three fingers of the right hand to pick out melodies, and you can play pretty accompaniments. You can play a counterpoint from Bach or a lot of different music.
Cool. And we'll get to see all that at your opening concert, September 26th, opening towards the end of September this year. That's good.
Yes. And then Appalatin is our next concert. I can't wait to hear these guys because they are all guys. It's a group of, I think, five who are Latin American in origin. And they, by gosh, have a new kind of fusion music that I would say, using American Appalachian roots music with their own Latin American styles. They sing in both languages, Spanish and English, and on a whole array of instruments.
And I love that there's representation of Ecuador, Nicaragua, Mexico, Guatemala, and Kentucky.
Yeah.
One of these things is not like the other, but wildly diverse cultures among the Latino cultures represented. But they also pull in a number of percussion instruments, I guess, and Native American flute. And it sounds like a fabulous new world music kind of mix.
That's right. And if that's hard to imagine, go to the website. Go to indiefolkseries.org. And for each of these acts, you can link to their website, hear a demo of the music, and know what you'll be in for.
One of the concert nights are special, I'm sure, but one of the most special nights is your open mic night, which was that a tradition starting from the very beginning?
I believe so. It's always been Thanksgiving weekend. Mm-hmm. People are in town, their families are in town, so it's a good way to bring everyone together and kind of shake off that turkey coma. The open mic night has always been a benefit for a local worthy cause. In the past, we've benefited Indiana Youth Group. We've given proceeds to Indie Reads and Cultures in Harmony. This year, in particular, open mic night will donate money to the UUI Youth Group Habitat for Humanity project. Each summer, our youth take a trip, and they build a house, and they travel, and so there are significant costs for the youth involved. And so our open mic night proceeds this year will benefit the youth group.
And performers who want to perform on open mic night, how does that work? What are those logistics?
It's pretty easy. They show up at 6 o'clock, and they sign up. We have limited slots available, so they need to be there as close to 6 as possible to make sure we can get them in. And everyone gets a 10-minute set.
And everything else is up to the performer.
Oh, we provide audio equipment and all that. They just...
But as far as what they perform...
Oh, it's totally up to them.
Yeah.
Right.
Fun.
And that's someplace where you hear a whole range of stuff because you'll have a friendly pro who's traveling through and says, you know, I think I'll just drop in and do something.
Yeah.
And then we've had college students. We've had younger folks. We've had some very surprising and moving performances from people who don't perform professionally a lot, many of them, but have something to offer. And they share it with us in little 10-minute bites. So there, too, if something's not quite to your liking, the next one's going to be different. And we always hear from the beneficiaries. So we'll have some people who do that great Habitat for Humanity work that so many of us have learned about through President Carter, who's been in the news with his health lately.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have a representative of Habitat for Humanity and some of the folks from the UUI youth group telling us what we'll be supporting.
And I want to mention, because we're almost out of time, but I want you to tell us a little bit about the Krista and Tim concert that's very close to the winter holidays.
That has become an audience favorite. This is our third year now hosting this concert. Tim and Krista are both very much loved here in Indianapolis. They'll do mostly their original songs. Krista, in particular, has some very interesting, hilarious holiday songs that she'll sing. And Tim has some holiday songs that he will most likely sing as well. They'll play some of their solo songs. They'll play some together. And we will just generally have a very good time.
Sharon Gamble with Dan Henkel and Joanne Smitty Brush from Indie Folk Series. Their 15th season launches with Roots balladeer Scott Cook this Saturday, September 26th at 7 p.m. You can learn more about Scott and the whole season at indiefolkseries.org. Again, indiefolkseries.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. The Shining Light Film Festival is a project of the group called Awareness of Mental Health Through the Performing Arts. This year, the festival is a special one-night event with a screening of an award-winning documentary titled Voices. Travis DiNicola spoke with Jackie Pittman and Rose Kleiman from the festival to find out more.
Jackie, Rose, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to see you both here.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And looking forward to learning more about this year's Shining Light Film Festival. I know that there's a very special film, Voices, we're going to talk about in just a minute, but give me a bit of background on what the Shining Light Film Fest is. Jackie?
The Shining Light Film Fest is an offshoot of Awareness of Mental Health Through the Performing Arts. It's a project to help the process of eliminating stigma towards mental health issues. That's been a goal of AMPA for several years. And with the Shining Light Film Festival.
And what's AMPA?
Awareness of Mental Health Through the Performing Arts.
Okay. And so that's sort of the overreaching organization. And then
Right. This
is the festival. And this has been going on. I mean, this is a national group as well? Or is this just...
Nope.
Oh, okay. Because I know it's been going on in Indianapolis for a while, but I thought maybe it was part of like a national movement. But
No. Just
here. So we're lucky to have it here.
It is just here. Yes. However, there has been interest shown to replicate something similar to it, specifically in Orange County, California, that I know of.
So. Okay. So how long has this been going on here?
This will be the third one that we have done.
Mm-hmm.
The first two were funded by the Indiana Division of Mental Health and Addiction. This one, we're on our own putting it on. So we're on a much more constrained series of films. We just have one film instead of a series of films.
So it's a film festival featuring one very important film. And so that film is called Voices. And the showing of that is going to be on October 2nd at the Christian Theological Seminary and 7 o'clock. Tell me about this film, because I know both you and Rose have been very excited about being able to bring this film to Indianapolis.
It's an award-winning documentary, and its uniqueness is that it's telling an intimate story about three different people with very different situations, and their own voices are heard, but also voices of family members, some of whom were able to assist as their family members were attempting to find the proper treatment for whatever was affecting them, as well as various community members. For me, one of the most important things is the sharing of personal lives and the people who come in contact with folks who have a mental illness is done in such a way to help not just reduce stigma and make them personable and real human beings that we can all identify with, but it also really helps reduce this automatic fear knee-jerk that I think we have so frequently now throughout the United States regarding needing to be afraid of violence or being afraid of people who happen to be labeled as mentally ill.
Sure. Tell me a bit about the people that are featured in this film, Sharon, Thomas, and Aaron. What do we know about these three people that are featured in this documentary, Voices?
Sharon is a mother who has schizophrenia, who is living in an extended care facility. It was a hard decision for the family to move her there, but she's safe and she's comfortable, and they visit regularly and frequently.
Mm-hmm. And they were able to get a diagnosis for her and were able to have family to support that kind of a living situation.
Okay.
Yeah. Thomas is essentially homeless and living on the streets, but is a very active and vibrant member of his community. And we hear from members of the community about the how he adds to the health and the joy of the community.
And several people didn't want to necessarily go up and talk to him because they were put off by the fact that he was homeless, and then realized once they actually engaged in conversation, they were able to develop a relationship.
Hmm. What city is he homeless in?
San Francisco.
Okay. And then the third person, Aaron?
We don't meet Aaron.
Okay.
He was killed tragically, but we meet his father, and he talks about how the family has had to deal with that violent death, and how the illness affects the individual, but it also very extremely affects the family. It's not just an individual diagnosis. It affects the entire family.
When was this movie made, Voices? It's fairly recent?
A year ago, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so obviously, I mean, this will be the first time that it's being shown here in Indianapolis. Tell me a bit about the filmmaker.
Gary is not only a physician, but he's also a filmmaker and dedicated to specifically looking at issues that need different kinds of responses within our communities throughout the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So he looks specifically at people he considers to be underserved or marginalized. And he himself has had a family member with schizophrenia, and is one reason why he wanted to do this particular film.
Okay.
And instead of giving us factual information about how many people have this or how many have that, or a lot of medical information, he really wanted to take this opportunity to tell personalized stories to get more people interested and caring about the situation, and then in the future more literal learning about the various illnesses can be discovered by people who want to pursue this.
The film was submitted last year to be part of the film festival last year.
Okay.
And we were not able to use it considering our lineup.
Mm-hmm.
But we're really pleased to be able to do it again this year.
That's great. That's great. Now, the evening that you're showing on October 2nd, it's more than just showing the movie, right?
Yes.
Well, tell me a bit about that.
Yeah.
You have some guest speakers?
We plan on having an opportunity for the audience to interact with the director, Dr. Gary Tsai, via Skype.
Okay.
That's our plan.
Mm-hmm.
And he will be able to explain to them or share with them things that he ran across while doing the movie. We also will have a panel of three people being moderated by Lee Steffen, who is a retired mental health worker here in town. We wanted to be sure we got the Indiana bent on what's going on with mental health, as well as the California. So that's
correct.
Why we're having the panel. So Lee is the moderator. We will have a patrol officer, Lance Dardine, who will be there to respond to the what Indianapolis and the Marion County are doing with crisis intervention with the police and people with mental health issues.
Right, because often it's the first responders and the police especially who are the ones dealing with people with mental illness.
And that's very timely since we the cover story of the Indianapolis Star last Sunday regarding the need for crisis intervention training and the unique ways that it can be most effective.
Mm-hmm.
the other two panelists.
Yes, because we care about the arts and feel that the arts is the way we want to look at changing people's perception and reducing stigma, I wanted to make sure we had an artist. And Leah Keel is going to join us on the panel. She's a visual artist.
Okay.
She's also associated with ArtMix, formerly VSA Indiana.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And she has her own studio that she's actually building at this very moment. She's also a mental health consumer, which is a label that's not my favorite, but it indicates that indeed she is someone seeking resources for mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And she's also a mental health advocate. Several artists I talked to didn't want to be involved because they didn't want the stigma of being
sure.
identified. And Leah felt very differently and is wanting to be an advocate and making sure people understand better what it means when you're suffering with mental health issues.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we also have Sarah Lund, who happens to be the VP for development at Christian Theological Seminary. She's also a minister and has also written a book called Blessed Are the Crazy. And when I first saw the title, I thought, well, will this be offensive to people? When I met with her most recently, I asked her about that. She herself has two immediate family members who have major mental illness challenges. And she felt that she wanted her book to be honest, a very honest portrayal of her family's story, which again is also true of the movie and the point of the movie, to be really honest and frank and family-oriented and individually-oriented. And so she decided that's the language she uses. And when I talked to Leah Keel about that, our artist, I wanted to know what she thought, and she lit up immediately. It mm-hmm. made such sense to her in a way that it may not to other people.
Hmm.
But the idea, it literally can refer to the Beatitudes, where you're blessing other people. And it also, I think, brings to mind the fact that we often are rejecting people who have mental illness or think somehow it's somebody's fault and it represents a defect rather than a physical situation with their body.
Sure, sure. Well, it sounds like this is going to be a very moving and important evening, informative, and certainly one that's going to provide a lot of information, maybe shatter some stereotypes as well as part of this when you're showing voices for the Shining Light Film Festival. Again, October 2nd at CTS, Christian Theological Seminary, 7 o'clock. Who are you, just briefly before we wrap this up, are you recommending see this movie? Who's the audience that you hope to have there?
Good question. We want anyone who cares about this and has already identified this as a need for our society to look at more closely. Family members, anyone who is in the mental health care profession, we're mm-hmm. notifying. We also are working with other organizations that serve folks with who are dealing with mental health issues. The Tangram organization
sure.
is part of what we're doing, as well as ArtMix and mm-hmm. several other organizations.
And NAMI.
And NAMI.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll have display tables in the lobby as well.
Okay, very good.
The Christian Theological Seminary Counseling Center in particular has been a strong partner in this with us. By doing it there at CTS, we felt that was a natural relationship.
Excellent.
Travis DiNicola with Jackie Pittman and Rose Kleiman from the Shining Light Film Festival. The documentary movie Voices will be shown on Friday, October 2nd at 7 p.m. at the Christian Theological Seminary Shelton Auditorium. More information can be found at ShiningLightFilmFest.com, ShiningLightFilmFest.com. And again, the film screens Friday, October 2nd at 7 p.m. Hey, Travis, I have it right here. Right here. Look, look, look.
What is that?
It's my learner's permit. The art of the matter is 16.
We can
drive.
Wow. Happy birthday to us.
Happy birthday to us. 16 years. And
that's pretty
we still
fantastic.
Haven't talked to all the cool artists and people behind the arts.
That's so true.
So much more to do. But we're going to let you in on some secret and not-so-secret events going on our calendar that we call
What'll We Do? Wow, 16th birthday.
16th
event.
Birthday.
We're going on this weekend at Footlight Musicals to kick off their 60th anniversary.
60th well, that's season. A much more significant
I don't know,
birthday
much
than
more
ours.
Than 16, but well, there you go. Footlight Musicals is doing the musical Nice Work If You Can Get It, which is just a lot of fun. Some great, great music in there, including Gershwin tunes, Someone to Watch Over Me, It's Wonderful, Fascinating Rhythm, Let's Call the Whole Thing Off, I Got a Crush on You, just great American musical comedy. Yeah, Tony Award nominated musical, and it opens this weekend, and then it runs through October 11th on Thursday, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. You can get more information at Footlight to check out the beginning of their 60th season.
That's fantastic. Well, you know, I'm starting to get a lot of October events in the lineup for the calendar, including some spooky ones. But the one I'm about to tell you about is not scary. In fact, it is way more glamorous than anything else. It is a glamorous evening of celebration for the Songbook Celebration. It's the Songbook Celebration Gala, and it features performances by Chris Mann, made famous on the NBC talent show The Voice. And so there's some formal inductions of folks into the Great American Songbook Hall of Fame. And after that, a series of themed nightclubs throughout the Center for the Performing Arts, throughout the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts.
Yeah.
So the clubs will feature music, dancing, food, and drinks, so you can float from one to another. And that's all coming up on Saturday, October 3rd. That's Saturday, October 3rd. So just around the corner, if you're interested in that, you'd better go online and grab your tickets fast.
Very cool. I remember when they did that for the opening of the Palladium, where they had sort of the different theme clubs and from floor to floor, space to space. That
was
very fun.
The venue is perfect for that.
It really is. So, Sharon, I know for your birthday, or our 16th birthday for the matter, of course, you want chocolate. And
chocolate.
So it's time to start talking about Chocolate Fest. Arts for Learning is having their annual Chocolate Fest, and this year it's going to be out at the Dallara IndyCar Factory in Speedway. New location for them, which will be very fun. It's going to be on Saturday, October 17th from noon to 4, and you can get tickets for $15 before the event or $20 at the door, and then go and sample chocolate from 22 different chocolate vendors and chefs and restaurants and bakers from all over the area supporting Arts for Learning's arts education programs.
I love that.
Yeah, very, very cool stuff. Mm. So that is coming up on the 17th.
I was in a certain familiar retail store over the weekend, and it was not only full of Halloween stuff, but starting to be populated for Christmas. Yikes. However, that tells you it's time to start thinking about Halloween-related events. And there's one. Yeah, thank you. You got your cue. I was hoping you'd get that. Ghost Stories at Crown Hill, very popular event, actually the most popular event Storytelling Arts of Indiana does. It's coming up October 10th, with stories that start at 7:30, but they're doing an RIP reception for true ghost story lovers from 5 to 7 before the ghost stories. That takes place at the waiting station at Crown Hill Cemetery. And if you've never been in the waiting station building, you're in for a treat. They're going to have Sun King beers and wine from Mass Ave Wine and treats from Food Guys Catering Company. And I think you might even be okay if you dressed in a theme way, preparing for the ghost stories a little bit later in the evening. You can find out more about all of this at storytellingarts.org, storytellingarts.org. And don't worry, the stories aren't so scary that you can't bring your children from aged 5 to 12. Travis, on the other hand, is scary, so keep your children away from the radio.
Probably a good idea. Hey, one of my absolute favorite events of the year is the Evening with the Stars that Indianapolis City Ballet puts on. And this is their 7th annual event that is coming up on October 3rd. And they are returning to Clues Memorial Hall at Butler for their 7th Evening with the Stars. And this year it's featuring 4 principal dancers from American Ballet Theater alongside a whole bunch of other great principal dancers from all around the world, from Russia, from Europe, from San Francisco Ballet, and they're also featuring some competitors from the Indianapolis International Ballet Competition, and so there'll be some local dancers there as well. But what's such a great thing about this event is that it brings together dancers for one night who would never really be sharing the stage otherwise. It's a great sampler of everything from classical ballet and contemporary ballet. There's usually about a dozen or so pieces throughout the evening. A lot of them are fairly short, so you know, if one isn't quite your style, wait for the next one.
Yeah.
But you will see some of the best ballet dancers in the world on this one stage in one night. And it's such a great event.
Say the date again.
It is on October 3rd. It's a Saturday night at Clues Hall, and it's Indianapolis City Ballet Evening with the Stars. Can't wait.
Great showcase, yeah. Hey, I'm up for any event whose dress code is masquerade chic, which means I'm intrigued by the announcement from the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra about their event called Haunted Hilbert, a Halloween masquerade held on not Halloween, but the night before, October 30th. That's a Friday night, 7 to midnight at the Hilbert Circle Theater. You'll start your evening by walking across a, not a red carpet, but a black carpet into the Hilbert Circle Theater. Complimentary samples and beverages donated by Indy's best local restaurants and vendors, Bluebeard, Palomino, Psalm, Shoefly, Public House, Sun King Brewery, and so many, many more. And you'll be entertained throughout the theater by ISO ensembles, DJs Slater Hogan and John Larner, and actors from Q Artistry. And the whole night concludes with a dance party on the theater's main stage and a donut bar sponsored by Rocket 88 Donuts. So you can learn much more about that. Once again, that's coming up on Friday, October 30th. Learn much more about that and score your tickets at IndianapolisSymphony.org.
Cool. Well, speaking of the symphony, there's actually two events I want to talk about that are free concerts going on this Sunday. One is the symphony for their community day on Sunday the 27th. Doors open at 2. There's a concert at 5. And there's a petting zoo with the violins. And you can learn how to do the Santa tap from Yuletide and lots of different activities and things for kids all afternoon long as well. The Metropolitan Youth Orchestra will be there. And then there's the concert itself at 5 o'clock. And it's free. It's their big community day this Sunday. And then also there's a free concert at the Indianapolis Central Library that is featuring jazz master David Baker. It's entitled Bach Meets Baker, and David Baker will be there along with a whole bunch of other great jazz musicians who will be honoring David Baker's legacy. And that concert starts at 2:30, and again that is at the Central Library, and it's going to be sort of looking at David Baker's works with chamber music and cello as well as jazz. So both concerts are free and on Sunday. Those should be awesome.
Lots of great music. Now for something completely different. Chills, thrills, terror, music and laughter, all on one stage at one time. It's the Friday Late Night Show at Comedy Sports Indianapolis. You know how they change that up periodically, and the Late Night Show, which starts at 10 o'clock, is not family-friendly. But that is has a monster mashup musical theme starting this weekend.
Very cool. You can learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis' Indie Arts Guide website, or, of course, listen to us each week on that calendar we call
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
For 22 years, the Lotus World Music and Arts Festival has taken over Bloomington with a tsunami of world music, dance, visual art, and much more. It's this weekend, running from the 24th through the 27th, and Sharon Gamble caught Lotus Festival Executive Director Dr. Sunny Fass to get some insights into the excitement.
There might be some listeners who've never been to the Lotus World Music and Arts Festival, so how would you describe it?
How would I describe the Lotus World Music and Arts Festival? It's a one-of-a-kind experience. It's something that's very special here in Bloomington. We bring music artists from all over the world in support of our mission, which is to experience, celebrate, and explore the diversity of the world's cultures through music and the arts. And to do this, we take over downtown Bloomington. This year, we have about 27 artists coming from 22 different countries. We have large outdoor dance tents with in churches and in historical theaters, the Buskirk Chumley here in Bloomington. And music goes from 6 till midnight on the Friday and Saturday nights of the festival. Our patrons buy a wristband, and that gets you in to everything that's going on. You can mix and match. You can create whatever experience you'd like to basically travel the world, but right here in downtown Bloomington.
What a treat. And how I know you haven't been there all 22 years. How did you get involved?
Well, I actually got involved with Lotus when I was a graduate student here getting my PhD in ethnomusicology here at Indiana University Bloomington. And I called the Lotus office within 2 or 3 weeks of arriving on campus in 2001, which was obviously the year 9/11 happened. So it was a fascinating year to be involved in something with this kind of global cross-cultural mission and the kind of statement that it made about bringing the world together, especially at that very difficult time. So I started as a volunteer with the organization in 2001, actually wrote part of my PhD dissertation about the festival.
Really?
And then went away to have a different career path for a little while and got the invitation to come back and apply for the executive director position here and could not have been more delighted to return to Lotus. It's one of my favorite organizations in the world.
Fantastic. How did the festival get started?
The festival was founded by three friends, and that was in 1994. And one of those friends was Lee Williams, who is one of the co-founders of the festival and continued to be its director and leader and visionary up until the time that I was hired 2 years ago. So there's a little bit of a passing of the torch. Mm-hmm. It started out very small, a couple artists, two venues, and now has expanded over 22 years to what it is today. It gets its name from kind of two different sources. There's definitely an homage in there to Quentin Lotus Dickey, the famous Indiana musician. And it's also paying tribute to the lotus flower, which grows all over the world, including here in Indiana.
Lovely. And why is Bloomington the right place for this festival?
Bloomington brings together just a number of different factors that I think make Lotus really, really possible. First of all, it's especially diverse, particularly on account of the university presence, I think. Mm-hmm. So you get a very varied, very multicultural crowd. You have a lot of interest and participation in things that are of other places, if you will. There's also, I think, Bloomington has a very, very deep culture of community and participation, and this is something that I've noticed through Lotus and also just through living here for many years. And you feel this really strongly during the festival, out in the streets, that this community comes together. They love to gather and share experiences, and this community also really loves the arts and music. And again, this is something you see coming to life in so many ways around Bloomington, but I think this passion for the arts and music are something that have really made Lotus possible and allowed it to continue to grow and thrive for this long.
Mm-hmm. Makes perfect sense. It just seems like such a great fit. And, of course, draws from way beyond the campus, way beyond the students and professors and staff members.
Oh, absolutely. We get participation from all walks of life, all lifestyles, all ages. Lotus is great. You can see, you know, someone who's a college student next to someone who's a high school student next to someone who's a grandparent, all dancing right up close to the stage, you know, in one of the tents, and you get this really multi-generational mix as well. But we also, as well, get a lot of visitors from out of town for the festival, people who come or came on account of a friend that recommended it and keep coming back every year. We usually see between 10 and 12,000 people downtown over festival weekend, and that's for not only our ticketed events, but also the range of free events that we have that happen over the weekend as well.
What a treat. And a nice thing for all the local merchants as well.
Absolutely. People come, they shop. There's wonderful restaurants here in Bloomington that people patronize. So it's a great benefit for the community as a whole, I think.
So I think it's important. A lot of people will come for a headliner like Buckwheat Zydeco, which, by the way, congratulations, that is a great score.
Really,
oh, talk about great dance music and just make you happy to be alive kind of music. Mm-hmm. But I want to talk a little bit about something that may not be quite as visible to the first timer or to the casual attendee, which is the arts beyond music. For example, I want to talk about what is star weaving.
Star weaving. So this is something that this is actually a preview of our big visual arts project that's happening in 2016.
Ah.
And this is a project called, I think it's 1 Million Stars for Peace. And it's a project that was started in Australia and has garnered international participation. And Lotus, our folks have been in contact with the folks in Australia who started this project. And it's this idea that worldwide, these eight pointed stars will be woven in support of this cause. And then creating an international installation that will then travel and be in different communities, and we're expecting to host part of that as well, either next year or the year after. So we're excited. We're one of the few participants outside of Australia at this point.
And, wow.
So this will be, this will be our major push for 2016, but we're giving folks a little bit of a taste of it to get started with star weaving. And this is something that organizations will be able to have a little bit of training how to do this, and then people can go off and kind of do it on their own, and it'll all kind of cycle back to a central point where we will then ship all these stars off to Australia.
What a fun
really,
project.
Really, really exciting.
Yeah. How about the Seeing Red World Textiles exhibit?
This is involving multiple Indiana collectors and their private collections of textiles from around the world that all involve the color red and the different ways that different communities and different cultures and different countries and create this color, whether it's through natural dyes or other types of materials or methods. So this exhibit is up all month at the Ivy Tech John Waldron Art Center. It's free, and it's an absolutely glorious exhibit. It's got garments and rugs and mats and bags and all the kinds of things that people weave and include the color red. These are beautiful artifacts from private collections that we're really excited to display all in one place.
You were talking about the star weaving being a little bit of a sneak preview. You have another sneak preview, which is people who know that our bicentennial is 2016 mm-hmm. will get a sneak peek at an Indiana folk art exhibition.
That is correct. It is actually one of the earliest bicentennial activities that is happening. This exhibit was created by Traditional Arts Indiana, which is an entity, it's kind of the folk commission, if you will, the Folk Art Commission for the state. It's also based here at IU, and we are collaborating with them to display this exhibit. We're only the second site in the state that's going to display it. So it will have kind of a combination of live people and informational panels and things that people can read to learn more about the different types of traditional crafts and art forms that are taking place here in the state. So we're exhibiting kind of four different aspects of that exhibit. We have a basket maker, a hoop net maker, a limestone carver, and a gentleman who does icon painting and wood carving. So people will be able to visit these exhibits and watch these folks doing their work. And then at our open air pavilion in the park, each of these artisans will also be getting up and doing a little bit of a talk, kind of we call a talk backstage, where folks can ask questions and they can really engage and share more about these traditional art forms that are being carried on here in the state.
Fantastic. Another reason to be proud of living here.
Absolutely.
So I know that this is given the quality and caliber of all of the artists, visual performing dancers, singers, other musicians, that this is a year-round planning process, and you're always, you're working ahead. I'm not going to put you on the spot and ask you who you're working on for 2016. Tell me one or two of the events that you're most looking forward to this year.
At the festival mm-hmm. or over the course of the whole year? At the festival. So I absolutely adore our Lotus in the Park presentation. This will be, I think, our 11th year with Lotus in the Park. It takes place at 3rd Street Park here in Bloomington, and it is about 5 hours worth of completely free programming. We have some of our festival artists doing some special workshops and performances. We have the Traditional Arts Indiana exhibit that I mentioned. We have hands-on crafts and art making for kids and for families. We partner with the Mathers Museum of World Cultures and the T.C. Steele State Historic Site. It's a full afternoon of all kinds of things going on. We usually get about 2,000 to 2,500 people coming through the park. And it's just an amazing experience. It's where a lot of people bring their families, especially little kids that can't really do the midnight downtown experience, but
sure.
They still get to get hands-on with Lotus at the park. So that would be, I think, the first thing that I would mention.
That's great because those little kids are going to grow up to be able to stay up until the late night performances.
Absolutely. Yeah. You start them early, get kids hooked on the arts young, and it's been shown in many, many studies that that is a great indicator of their participation in the arts
sure.
as adults. Obviously, I love our evening downtown presentation. It's just such a musical and cultural journey that I've enjoyed long before I was ever, you know, working for this organization. One of the things that's very special this year is we once again have our downtown parade, which is, again, a participatory thing. I think some of Lotus's magic is in its the participation and the folks, times where people can get really involved in what's going on. So this parade is on the Saturday night. It's right down Kirkwood Avenue. It's right through the downtown. And the band leading it is a 14-piece North African brass band.
Whoa.
And it's just going to make such an impact. They are drawing on some of these traditions in Algeria and places like that, where there is this music in the public square, and it's just really designed to draw people in. It's danceable. We're asking folks to bring their bikes and decorate their bikes and participate in the parade, or walk in the parade with their families and carry a banner. Our parades are really something special to witness, and we don't get to do them every year, so we're really excited about that as well.
Sharon Gamble with Lotus World Music and Arts Festival Executive Director Dr. Sunny Fass. There's something for everyone at the Lotus Festival, including kids of all ages, and the headliner is the high-spirited Buckwheat Zydeco. Learn all you need to know at lotusfest.org. Again, lotusfest.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I'll find out what's going on at CTS this fall.
I'll get a preview of auditions to be held at Ball State for a big piano competition.
And I'll check out this year's German Fest, including the Wiener Dogs. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.